A glow appears over the horizon. Spiked shards of light shoot upwards from the Earth's surface. As the spinning world recedes into starry space, the word universal appears around the equator. British Sky Broadcasting presents Patch Adams with audio description by Michael Miller. A caption reads, "The following is based on a true story." Universal Pictures presents a Blue Wolf Farrell Minhoff Bungalow 78 production. A winter mist clings to a steep hillside, adorned with white frosted trees. A Greyhound bus comes round a bend in the road. A Tom Shadyac film. Robin Williams in Patch Adams. A young man, unshaven and slightly dishevelled, sits on his own near the back of the bus looking out of the window.
All of life is a coming home. Salesmen, secretaries, coal miners, beekeepers, sword swallowers, all of us. All the restless hearts of the world, all trying to find a way home. It's hard to describe what I felt like then. Picture yourself walking for days in a driving snow. You don't even know you're walking in circles. The heaviness of your legs and the drifts. Your shouts disappearing into the wind. How small you can feel. How far away home can be.
The bus leaves the young man by the side of the road. It's twilight. Inside a bathroom, the man washes his hands and face in the sink. He looks at his sad reflection in the mirrored cabinet door. He opens the cabinet. Inside are several bottles of pills.
Home. The dictionary defines it as both a place of origin and a goal or destination. And the storm? The storm was all in my mind. Or as the poet Dante put it, in the middle of the journey of my life, I found myself in a dark wood, for I had lost the right path. Eventually, I would find the right path, but in the most unlikely place.
A grim white building. A caption reads, "Fairfax Hospital Psychiatric Ward 1969. Inside, two male psychiatric nurses dressed in white lead the man to a metal gate. One of them slides the gate open. They go through and the gate is shut again. In the ward, a man sits in a wheelchair with his right hand raised in the air. A grey-haired man approaches them and holds up four fingers.
How many fingers do you see?
You crazy stop sneaking up on me like that.
How many?
Four.
Four? Four? Another idiot.
The man goes.
You're gonna love it here.
Got a new one, Jane. Hunter Adams, self-committed, suicidal. Slayed him with Dr. Prack. All right.
The male nurses escort Hunter Adams down a corridor. They stop and a door is unlocked. Inside, a man is perched on the end of a bed.
Hey, Rudy, what's the word, my man? He left that bed 3 weeks. He won't give you any trouble.
He needs another bedpan. They're in the closet. Wake up at 7 a.m.
Excuse me. Is there any way I could have my own room?
The nurses exchange a look.
Oh, absolutely. Just call a concierge and ask for a suite overlooking the fountain.
No, I prefer the cabana room. Get some sleep.
The door is locked. Hunter watches the nurses walk away through the reinforced glass in the door, then turns and looks at Rudy sitting on the bed.
Hi.
Hunter takes off his sweater, revealing a t-shirt and hairy arms.
You're a lot fuzzier than my last roommate.
Keeps me warm.
One of the nurses holds Rudy down. The other gives him an injection in the butt. Daytime. Hunter's interviewed by a doctor.
My father died when I was 9. He was in the army. He wasn't home very much. 2 weeks before he died, he told me that in the Korean War, it felt like he lost his soul. All this time, I thought it was me. I've moved 7 times in the last year. I've had several jobs. Nothing seemed to fit. I don't seem to fit.
Hunter smiles sadly. The doctor looks at his notes.
And when your father died, how did that make you feel?
I don't know. I was 9.
The doctor spoons sugar into his coffee.
It was like there's this distinction suddenly between you and the rest of the world. I looked around me. Life went on just like it did before. But it wasn't like it was before. My uncle helped. He would visit. He at least listened. And I thought, if I could light my own farts, I could fly to the moon, or at least Uranus. But if I couldn't do that, at least I could use my penis as a pogo stick, and that might be a way of getting around.
I'm sorry? Yes, that's good. Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I think you're making fine progress, Hunter. We'll talk later in group.
Thank you.
The man in a wheelchair is brought into a room, his right arm still raised in the air. The grey-haired man passes, holding up 4 fingers. Hunter's at a table.
4! 4! 4! Oh, you are all insane! Insane! 4!
Arthur Mendelsohn.
The Arthur Mendelsohn?
Ran Beaton Industries. Guy was one of the most innovative minds of our time. Look at him now. He can't even count the windows.
God, what happened to him? Why is he here?
Self-committed, genius syndrome, Howard Hughes type shit. Constantly digging into the creative potential of the human mind. I guess he dug too deep.
Real work.
A group session in Hunter and Rudy's room. Rudy's still sitting on the bed.
Why are we meeting in here? It's cramped. Well, Everton, we're meeting in here so that Rudy can participate.
It's cramped.
Does anyone else have a thought on that?
Cramped!
I think he has a question.
The man with his arm in the air.
You find that funny, Hunter, making fun of a man's infirmity?
Maybe he does have a question. He's alive.
He's catatonic.
He still has a brain. Maybe he wants to participate, too.
Yeah. Maybe he has a question.
Yeah. Maybe he knows why we're cramped.
Hunter reads the man's name on his wristband.
Maybe Beanie knows a lot more than we give him credit for. Excuse me, Beanie?
Which way is heaven?
Correct.
That'll be enough, Hunter.
Beanie, how much taller is Will Chamberlain than you?
Right.
Hey, Beanie! Where's the ceiling?
That's enough. Stop it.
Where do the birds fly, Beanie?
How do you say hello to Hitler?
Beanie, how does Hitler say hello?
Hey, Beanie, how do you check an elephant for a hernia? Beanie, who'd win a staring contest? Beanie!
Who fought it?
Beanie! Who likes to masturbate?
They all put their hands up. Male nurses stride in and remove the group members, leaving just Hunter and Rudy behind.
Hey, Beanie! Ciao, Beanie! Arigato, Beanie!
Bye, Beanie.
The doctor shuts them in.
It was really a good session, I thought.
They both giggle. It's evening. A leaking paper cup sits on a desk strewn with sheets of paper. They're covered in handwritten mathematical equations. As Arthur sits scribbling, Hunter appears in the door wearing a dressing gown.
May I come in?
If you bend your medial collateral ligaments, place one talus in front of another, I don't see where you'd have a problem. Of course, if there were a news story covering this event, the headline might read, "Small brain enters room."
Hunter sits by the desk.
Fingers. What's the answer?
Oh, you're another one of those bright young fellows who always know the right answer, that, Welcome to real life.
Arthur continues writing without lifting his eyes. Hunter looks down at the desk, and lifts up the leaking paper cup. There's a small hole in the side dribbling tea. He sees a sticky label on the side of the desk. He peels it off and uses it to patch the cup. The leak stops. Hunter puts the cup down. Arthur finally looks at him with a quizzical expression. Hunter smiles. Arthur takes Hunter's hand and raises it up, fingers outstretched.
How many do you see?
I have four fingers, Arthur.
No. Look at me. What? You're focusing on the problem. If you focus on the problem, you can't see the solution. Never focus on the problem. Look at me. How many do you see?
Hunter focuses his eyes on the four outstretched fingers.
Look beyond the fingers. How many do you see?
As Hunter looks through the fingers focusing on Arthur's face, the hand becomes a blurry double image.
Eight.
Eight. Yes. Eight's a good answer. Yes. See what no one else sees. See what everyone else chooses not to see. Out of fear, conformity, laziness. See the whole world anew each day. And the truth is, you're well on the way. You didn't see something here besides a crazy, bitter old man. You wouldn't have come in the first place.
Arthur smiles and turns back to his writing.
What do you see when you look at me, Arthur?
You fixed my cup. I'll see you around. Patch.
Hunter smiles, then thinks. Later, Rude is sitting on his pillow, bouncing up and down. Hunter's in the adjacent bed.
Rudy, stop. You're throwing off my rhythm. You'll go blind. Please.
I have to go to the bathroom.
Then go. It's right over there, 15 feet away.
I would, but...
What, the squirrels?
He nods.
How many?
There's only one just now.
You can't go to the bathroom because of one squirrel.
If I get off the bed, he'll get the others.
Oh, Rudy, that's not the point. They're squirrels. Squirrels, Rudy. They're one of the most amiable creatures on the planet.
Oh, no, they're not.
On the list of hostile predators, they're right above the bottom, just above baby chicks and slugs. What could they possibly want? Your nuts?
Do you think?
Oh, Rudy, come on, I'll take you.
Don't move.
What?
Another
one?
Rudy nods.
It's on the end of your bed, on the rail.
Hunter's eyes follow Rudy's gaze to the end of the bed. There's nothing there.
Be careful, it's gonna jump.
Slowly, Hunter raises his index finger, then aims it like a gun at the invisible squirrel. He fires. Hunter blows on his finger.
That's one!
At the end of the bed!
Bang!
Now,
then
put him across the sprinkler!
Rudy jumps onto Hunter's back to grab a squirrel. A male nurse looks through the glass in the door.
We need more cover! They're coming from the bathroom!
Get out of cover, Rudy!
Number four!
The nurse walks away. Hunter and Rudy tip a bed on its side.
Get down!
They peer over the bed with imaginary binoculars.
They're gone. I think it's safe to go to the bathroom, Rudy. Come on.
No, it's too risky.
No, not when you have.
He reaches for something.
Bazooka.
Yeah. Load.
Rudy loads the imaginary bazooka resting on Hunter's shoulder.
Let's do it!
They jump over the bed and Rudy runs into the bathroom. Hunter waits outside leaning on the wall. Hunter looks pleased. Daytime. Hunter marches down the corridor to the doctor's office.
I'd like to leave.
The doctor glances up.
Hunter, we'll have to discuss this at your scheduled time.
I'm leaving.
And have you thought about what you'll do?
I want to help people. Last night with Rudy, I connected to another human being. I want more of that. I want to learn about people. I want to help them with their troubles.
That's what I do.
But you suck at it. You don't even look at people when they're talking. I want to listen. I want to really listen to people.
I'm sorry, Hunter. I can't allow you to leave. I believe you still have some issues to work out.
Oh, well, I don't need your permission because I admitted myself.
Hunter, I must warn you. My report will read AMA, that you were signed out of this hospital against medical advice.
And my report will read IDGARA. I don't give a rat's ass. And my name is Patch.
Hunter, now known as Patch, leaves. The doctor slowly sits down and looks at the closed door.
One morning, I woke up and I knew.
A caption reads, 2 years later. It's summer. The imposing frontage of Virginia Medical University peeps through some tall trees. Students crisscross the grounds. Smiling, Patch Adams strolls along the crowded path, carrying a brown leather holdall. He's wearing a stripy orange shirt. Inside a large red brick building, he walks down a corridor passing students who are standing around chatting. A young man is at a desk in a twin-bedded room.
Hey, it's a nice room.
May I help you?
Yeah, you know, I could really use a foot massage right about now.
Rephrasing, what are you doing here?
I'm your new roommate. I'm moving in.
Patch walks to the bed by the window.
I don't mean to be rude, but aren't you a little old to be starting medical school?
You know, Babe Ruth was 39 when he joined the Yankees.
Well, he wasn't.
You're right. But I could really use an example like that, and if you ever find one, please let me know.
They shake hands.
Hi. Patch Adams.
Mitch Roman, Georgetown University. I was awarded the William F. Thompson Scientific Achievement Award.
Emerson Elementary. I once drew a picture of a rabbit that got me 2 gold stars.
Mitch nods disdainfully.
I'm gonna go back over there.
Mitch looks bewildered. The white-coated dean addresses students in a lecture hall.
First, do no harm. What is implicit in this simple precept of medicine? An awesome power. The power to do harm. Who gives you this power? The patient. A patient will come to you at his moment of greatest dread, hand you a knife and say, "Doctor, cut me open." Why? Because he trusts you. He trusts you the way a child trusts. He trusts you to do no harm. Sad fact is, human beings are not worthy of trust. It is human nature to lie, take shortcuts, lose your nerve, get tired, make mistakes. No rational patient would put his trust in a human being, and we're not going to let him. It is our mission here to rigorously and ruthlessly train the humanity out of you and make you into something better. We're going to make doctors out of you.
Patch turns and smiles at a pretty blonde student who ignores him and looks away. The dean leaves the hall. The blonde student and Mitch join the applause, but Patch sits frowning. Outside, he catches up with the girl.
2 years of studying, I thought we'd have more contact with patients, didn't you? Hi, I'm Patch. You've just experienced a North American greeting, whereby one person offers a verbal label to another as an expression of welcome and friendship.
Lesbian, ballbuster, airhead, leech, whichever one of these disgusts you the most, take your pick. Please. Pass the word, I'm not here to date. I am not here to flirt. I'm here to study.
Oh, thank you. I thought only I could repel women with that kind of raw efficiency.
Well, you just met your match. Patch Adams.
Truman Schiff.
Nice to meet you, Truman. Will you go out with me?
Patch sits with the bespectacled Truman in the university diner.
Can I ask you one question?
What?
Do you buy everything the dean was saying today?
What do you mean?
I mean, that whole drill sergeant thing, like, we're gonna make doctors out of you medical scum. Now drop down, give me 20.
That whole Marine thing? We're not even gonna see a patient until the third year. Up until then, it's just memorizing facts. Why don't you just shove the
Hamburger?
Book up? Right here on the colon. That's where it's going anyway. Thanks very much.
So why do you want to be a doctor?
I want to help.
I want to connect with people. A doctor interacts with people at their most vulnerable. He offers treatment, but he also offers counsel and hope. That's why I love the idea of being a doctor.
I've always been fascinated by the development of the human mind.
Pumping neurons.
We start out so open and spontaneous. We're real individuals, and then somewhere along the way, we're drawn to conformance as if we're conditioned by programmed responses.
That's true. But sometimes you can alter the program response just by changing some of the conditions, altering the parameters. Let me show you.
They leave the diner.
We'll call it the Hello Experiment. The goal will be to break through program response by changing normal parameters and getting a new emotional response from the person.
Ready to enter data?
Patch startles an old lady.
Hello.
Hi.
He's hanging upside down from a lamppost. The old biddy hurries away as Patch jumps down.
Wait, I don't get it. Hi is a programmed response.
I reached her.
You scared her.
No. Wait. Wait for it.
She looks back and laughs.
Oh, you nuts.
A smile. 10 seconds. Victory. There's more. Come, my friend.
They pass a woman.
Howdy.
Hi.
See, response time is diminishing. Yesterday, I made 12 random phone calls. I talked to one man named Dale for 3 hours. He told me amazing things, Truman.
What does this all prove, other than you're out of your mind?
Truman, what's the difference between a doctor and a scientist? And don't say salary.
People.
We want to become doctors because we want to help people.
I want to be a pediatrician.
Okay, little people. The point is, if you want to become a doctor, we have to learn to treat the patient as well as the disease. That's why we have to dive into people. Wade into the sea of humanity, Truman.
A bus pulls up.
Ballroom 7, right upstairs on your left. You guys at the Meatpackers Convention?
Yes, sir.
Right up the stairs. This
way,
Ballroom 7.
Does a chicken have lips?
You'll find out upstairs. Come on, let's go.
Like a bulldog on a pork chop.
A sign at the crowded Meatpackers Convention reads, "Nice to meet you," spelt M-E-A-T. Patch talks to a man in a Stetson.
Down in New Zealand, they found a whole new use for sheep.
What's that?
Wool.
You kill me! You kill me! I love you!
Oh, Daddy!
You, I bet you heard that, dude! Come here!
Heard it! Heard it! That's a goat joke!
Men wait in line to meet Miss Meat. The buxom lady smiles at Truman, who smiles back sheepishly. Patch enters the 23rd annual meat race. Contestants prepare to slide joints of raw meat down chutes into a row of buckets.
On your meat! Get set! Go!
Patch wins and high fives with other contestants. Later, Patch is on the podium under a banner which reads, "Shanks for the memories."
Pork packers! Rump wrappers! Bull shippers. Lend me your steers. You know, we packers have been taking a bad rap for years. Yes. Because we all want to be the best damn packers there are. Because I'm proud of my meat. And I know you're proud of your meat. Whip it, zip it, and send it out. You know, some people say chicken.
No!
Some people say fish.
No!
I say now is the time for cow.
Yeah! Eat cow, eat cow, eat cow, eat cow, eat cow.
The organizers and the man in the Stetson step up to put a white coat on Patch. He gives Truman a hug.
Eat cow, eat cow, eat cow, eat cow.
Hey, bud. Hey, you know,
yes, thanks.
Oh, yeah.
Hey. Whoa.
What is it?
What's the difference between a first year and a third year medical student?
Patch catches sight of his reflection in a mirror. He admires his white coat. Some white-coated medical students follow Dr. Eaton down a corridor. Patch and Truman follow them, also wearing white coats. A woman is lying on a trolley. She looks worried.
Here we have a juvenile onset diabetic with poor circulation and diabetic neuropathy. As you can see, these are diabetic ulcers with lymphedema and evidence of gangrene. Questions?
Any osteomyelitis?
None apparent, although not definitive.
Treatment?
To stabilize the blood sugar. Consider antibiotics, possibly amputation.
What's her name?
The students turn and look at Patch standing at the back of the group.
I was just wondering the patient's name.
Dr. Eaton looks at his clipboard.
Marjorie.
Hi, Marjorie.
Yes, thank you. Let's move on.
The group walks off, but Patch and Truman stay.
What are you doing?
Continuing the experiment.
Maybe we can start a lemonade stand together after we get kicked out of medical school.
I cannot stand it in there, Joletta. He doesn't have to talk to me like that.
I know, hon, but really, how good a mood would you be in?
At the nurse's desk.
May I help you?
So I'll meet you at the club.
Oh, great. Maybe we'll play the back nine. Hmm?
Truman leaves.
Hello, I'm Patch. I'm studying medicine here. Well, not here, but you know.
Look at here, Judy, another future boss.
Oh, I wouldn't look at it like that.
You may think I'm exaggerating, but in another 5 years, you'll be so full of yourself, you'll have to hang a cup out your ass just to catch the excess.
Ouch.
Well, hell, why not? It's the only time in my life I'm gonna outrank him. Might as well enjoy it.
Who's in that room?
No. Don't even think about it. He'll bite your head off.
Mr. Davis, pancreatic cancer.
Room 305.
How long does he have?
Longer than you if you go in that room. So be sure you steer clear.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
He smiles at Nurse Joletta and turns away.
Hey, what year are you?
Patch holds up three fingers as he walks off. He passes an orderly. Patch keeps his arms folded to hide the meat packer's badge on the breast pocket of his white coat. As he walks, he sees the dean coming towards him reading some notes.
Dr. Landacre to administration, please.
Patch has ducked into a ward and peeps through a glass panel in the door. Once the dean has gone, he looks around. Patch sees that he's in a children's ward. There are two rows of beds. The children are lying very still. In the bed nearest the door is a small child with no hair. Patch walks over and smiles. The child looks up at him.
Hi.
Hi.
What's your name?
Cameron.
Hi, Cameron. I'm Patch.
Patch looks at a table by the bed. There's a tray with some medical equipment. He sees two big red rubber enema bulbs in a steel dish. Patch turns away and snips the end off one of the bulbs with surgical scissors. He turns back wearing the bulb like a clown's red nose.
I have a cold. Just a bit of a cold. Is my nose red? Oh, it is.
It's red.
Patch picks up a reflex testing hammer.
What's that?
You don't know? I don't either.
His arm shoots up.
Taxi! Try on you.
Cameron taps Patch with the hammer, making his arm fly up.
It's working very well.
The other children sit up in their beds and look. Cameron laughs. He pretends to be a bumblebee. They press noses.
Bee kisses.
Flapping his hands like wings, Patch pretends to fly and crashes into the window by the next bed. A little boy with a shaved head looks up.
Hi. Mind if I sit up?
Patch misses the bed and falls on the floor. He pops up with a rubber glove on his head. He inflates the glove with a straw. The glove flies off into the air. Patch walks to the next bed and picks up a bedpan. He puts it on his head.
Hello, my friend. Hello.
Oh, look out!
He puts two bedpans on his feet, like giant shoes. He starts to dance, and the kids jump up and down on their beds. Patch falls over.
What is going on here?
A nurse looks in astonishment as Patch picks himself up. The kids continue jumping around as Patch sheepishly walks to the door. He hands the bedpans to the nurse on his way out. Still wearing his red nose, Patch waves and smiles at the kids through the door. he turns to see the dean, who is not smiling. Later, in the dean's office.
I've checked up on you, Hunter. Patch. Hunter, Dr. Pratt was a colleague of mine at Brigham. He tells me you have a brilliant mind, and like many brilliant people, you don't necessarily think the rules apply to you.
Not all the rules, sir, but the golden rule, I think that applies to everyone. Don't you, sir?
I've also heard you have a real passion to be a doctor, Hunter.
Patch.
Truth of it is, Hunter, passion doesn't make doctors. I make doctors. Understood?
Understood.
Good. Medical students, as a rule, have no contact with patients until the third year. Is that clear?
It is, sir, but don't you think it would be...
Our way of doing things is a product of centuries of experience. It's all there for a reason.
The dean nods towards the window.
It's my hospital. I know everything that goes on inside of it. Everything.
Sitting round a table.
Deviation of the tongue.
There would be a problem with the cranial nerve.
Which side?
Right side, 10th nerve. 12th nerve. You know how many billions of dollars are wasted on malpractice insurance? That's money that goes to lawyers that could actually go to patients.
Hi, guys. Sorry, I'm late.
Does everybody know Corinne Fisher, Adelaine's roommate? I invited her to join our study group.
The blonde girl sits with them.
So, Corinne, why do you want to be a doctor?
Is it just me, or do we have a lot of work to do?
It's just a question. I think it's the question, isn't it?
Actually, I don't find the question here in the outline.
What page are you on? 1432, deviation of the tongue.
Thanks. I think we'd learn more if we were working closely with patients.
I thought that's why we're here studying, to learn enough to help the patients. Adelaine, don't waste your breath. Don't you...
Patch is wearing false teeth.
Don't you think I see through you? Hmm? You act like you're above the system when you're really just a nonconformist. You have to get under the fingernails of any authority figure that crosses your path as a way of dealing with some insecurity.
Antisocial personality, I believe. Intriguing diagnosis.
Truman, this isn't funny. Smart people flunk out of here all the time.
You know, odds are one of the five of us sitting here, actually.
Another question. In a perfect system, why are patients referred to by their disease, as in that interesting cancer patient, and not by their name?
Well, it certainly isn't to be mean. It's to prevent transference.
And why is that bad?
And the one flunking out is...
Listen, can we get back to the tongue, please?
What if a doctor becomes emotionally involved with a patient? What is wrong with that? Does a doctor explode? No. Who came up with these rules? It's against the Hippocratic Oath, I think.
I don't really have time for this. Sorry.
Corinne gets up and leaves.
Bye. Bye.
Patch chases after her.
Bye.
Bye. Truman?
Yeah.
Outside.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to stop you from studying.
Go
away! Well, I just believe there's more to being a doctor than memorizing facts about the ventricular arteries.
I don't care what you think, I care about my biology test.
Well, maybe I could help you. I read the bio book.
You've read the whole book?
Oh, yeah. And I'm on to Whitman. You know, you can get a copy of Leaves of Grass at the bookstore if you have a 20% student ID card.
I don't want Walt Whitman.
Well, he wouldn't want you either. He was a homosexual. But that's not relevant. What's relevant is that he was a medical man. He was a nurse in the Civil War and wrote great poetry. A foot and lighthearted, I take to the open road, healthy and free. The world
before. I'm not sure if you've noticed this, but in a class of 163 students, there are 8 women. 8. I've had to work really hard to get here, and I'm gonna have to work even harder to stay here, and I'm not about to blow it by wasting my time on your flighty theories of goodness. I'm here to learn about medicine. Period. Excuse me.
She cycles away.
Just a guess, but I think somebody's running away from something.
Why can't it just be that I'm running away from you?
Little Cameron has her head in a brace and is strapped to a rotating bed. As it flips over, she sees Patch under the apparatus lying on his back on the floor, wearing a red nose. He waves at her. Students are working in a lab.
Very nice. Very nice.
Corinne's at a table. A full-size skeleton appears beside her.
Why look thin to you? I said, I'm trying to lose weight. I'm just trying to lose a little weight. Is that too much? Have I gone too far here? I got a boner. I am a boner.
Nurses watch Patch walking down the corridor in a strange orange costume. In the class, he waves the skeleton's arm at Corinne.
Donner, party of 50? Donner! Donner party over here!
I don't know what's wrong here. Something basically, I'm trying to lie to the dials here, but the bottom line is your TV's broken here.
My name
is Officer Patio Furniture. I'm here today to talk to you briefly about narcolepsy. Narcolepsy. Clowns, salute! Very good. Wide face.
Children in red noses pull a face.
Fart face!
The hospital will cover all of your bills. Any other questions? My name is Dr. Phil. I'll be your surgeon. Oh, there you are.
Hey, let's get ready to party! Grazie, babe! Grazie! Grazie, I can't get out!
Nurse Gilletta and the other members of staff clap as Patch and the kids bow to each other. Students look at a notice board to see their exam results. Corinne runs her finger down the list. She scored 79. She sighs. Looking higher up the list, Mitch has 94. Patch has 98.
Don't believe everything you read. Looks like you didn't need that study group after all.
Well, it's no 98, but I'm still here.
Excuse me.
They walk outside together.
You know, this completely disrupts my point of view. Mm-hmm. It was so much more convenient thinking of you as an idiot.
Hey, don't count me out yet.
Well, it's frustrating. I study all night and I'm barely hanging on by my fingernails.
Forget about that. I want to show you something that's extraordinary.
At a table.
An enema bulb?
It used to be. This amazing piece of rubber, when applied to your face, can brighten another person's day. Even a suffering patient.
I'm sure it's really great for kids.
Oh, no, not just kids. Anybody. Patients are opening up to me, Corinne. They're sharing their dreams, their fantasies. And if you hit on the right topic, they brighten up for one brief moment. They don't concentrate on the pain. They don't even feel the pain.
Let's try it on.
No, thank you.
I want you to try it on and help me. Come on, just try it on. If you don't laugh, I'll never see it again. But if you do, you have to help me. Just try it on.
Reluctantly, Corinne puts on the red nose and looks away.
Ta-da.
Patch holds up a mirror.
You didn't say anything about a mirror.
Who do you think you look like?
Carl Malden?
She pulls off the nose.
You can take the nose off now.
So what's the favor?
Some framed photographs of a man hunting and fishing sit on a bedside table. An old man is asleep in bed. He has a tube going into his nose. There's a woman sleeping in the next bed. Strange long shadows move across the wall. A toy gun is placed in the sleeping man's hand. Patch pops up at the end of the bed, holding a balloon animal. It's a pink elephant. Corinne and Truman also have balloons.
Ready.
Patch flicks the man's foot. He wakes up.
Dumbo incoming!
A menagerie of balloon animals is thrown at the man. He sits up firing his pop gun, exploding the balloons. People in the next room sit up. The woman wakes and joins in. At the nurse's desk,
nothing. Should I go check?
I said it's nothing.
The younger nurse walks away. Nurse Gilletta looks at a door down the corridor from where the noise is coming. As they applaud, the man laughs and wags his finger.
Well, congratulations, Jackie. You've done it all. You've basically nailed every balloon from here to Timbuktu.
That was incredible, Patch. Almost as good as the real thing. One last safari. That's all I wanted. Thank you, Truman. Both of you. That was wonderful. It's been a long time for me.
What about you, dear? What's your fantasy?
When I was a little girl, whenever my mother would cook spaghetti, she would let me reach into the pot and squeeze the noodles.
Oh.
I've always wanted to be in a swimming pool full of noodles, wall to wall and top to bottom. An entire pool full of noodles.
Pat shows her a pink balloon animal.
How about a poodle?
Outside.
And the award for valor goes to Truman Schiff and his red welt. Thank you, Truman.
Located just above my nasal bone, adjacent to my...
Glabella!
Glabella! Glabella!
Good night, Truman.
Right. Fun's fun, kids, but my whelp and I have a study date with the autonomic nerves of the thorax.
Good luck. Watch out for the Circle of Willis.
Good luck to you.
And our next award. In the tradition of the great poodle handlers, where no actual transference took
place. All right. What you did in there, it was very nice, I admit.
Whoa, is that a little ice that just chipped off?
You're never serious, are you?
No, I tried that for years. Never really worked for me. Oh.
They stop walking.
Well, I'd better go hit the thorax as well, so.
I have a crush on you. Ha! Can't believe I just blurted that out. It's like...
Look, thank you for taking me along tonight. I actually had fun. Good night.
Wait a minute. Just now when I said I had a crush on you, you didn't say, no way, loser, I'd rather have a lobotomy by a leopard. I mean, that means something.
Well, maybe I was just being polite and I didn't want to hurt your feelings.
But you're not polite. You're rude. Sometimes you're downright bitchy.
Good night.
Good night.
Corinne smiles. She turns and climbs the steps to her hall of residence. Patch watches her go, looking pleased with himself. Daytime. Patch, wearing a white coat, loiters outside Mr. Davis's room 305. At the desk, nurses Julie and Joletta watch him go in and exchange a worried look. Patch stands by the door and looks at Mr. Davis, who is sleeping restlessly. He's on a drip. Patch walks over to the bottom of the bed and starts to massage Mr. Davis's left foot.
Blue skies shining on me, nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song.
Are you a doctor?
Oh, no, I'm a medical student. But if there's anything I can do to help you.
You want to help me?
Oh, yeah. What can I do?
Listen, you little do-gooder prick. If you want to make yourself feel good, don't make me pay for it. Now get out of here, because you don't help shit.
Julie and Joletta observe Patch's hasty exit. Patch gives them a weak smile and walks off. Later, the stern-faced dean marches down a corridor. A young boy and his father watch Patch riding a bed like a rodeo bucking bronco. Patch is wearing clown shoes and a red nose.
Yo, right!
Do you want to tell me what it is you think you're doing?
Patch pulls off the red nose and stands up to face the dean.
Just getting a few laughs, sir. In the American Journal of Medicine has found that laughter increases secretion of catecholamines and endorphins, which in turn increases oxygenation of the blood, relaxes the arteries, speeds up the heart, decreases blood pressure, which has a positive effect on all cardiovascular and respiratory ailments, as well as overall increasing the immune system response.
Patch walks to the door.
Smart clown, eh?
Looking angry, the dean hurries after Patch.
Mr. Adams, when I told you I knew Dr. Pratt, did I mislead you in some way to think I'm a pushover like he is? Kindly remove that coat. I told you you are not to see the patients till the third year.
I'm just visiting friends, sir.
Why are you here? If you want to be a clown, go join the circus. Patients don't need to be entertained. They don't need a friend. They need a doctor. I don't want to see you in this hospital again.
What if I visit the patients on my own time?
Yes, about your own time. Been brought to our attention that perhaps we should be suspicious of the level of your grades.
What are you saying? I'm cheating?
Your scores among the top in your class, yet you never seem to study.
That's ridiculous.
Your classmates don't seem to think so.
Really? Who?
I'm warning you. Stay out of this hospital.
The dean turns and walks away. Patch bites his lip. In their room, Mitch is working at the desk. Patch bursts in.
You told Volkart I cheated. I know you did it. Just tell me why.
Look, cut the crap, Hunter. I live with you. I know how much you study, or I should say don't study. And you do better than me. Give me a break.
You arrogant, pompous prick. Who appointed you custodian of the medical profession? Is it because your father was a doctor and his father was a doctor? Some sort of genetic thing?
You're damn right.
Really?
You know, I grew up with it. I know what it takes to look in the eyes of dying people day after day after day and to come home for dinner at night. I know what it takes. You don't have it.
Oh, really? And you do? If you don't like me, just say it.
I don't like you!
Why don't you like me? You're a prick and I like you.
Because you make my effort a joke! I want to be a doctor. This isn't a game to me. This isn't playtime. This is serious business. I have it in me to be a great doctor. But in order to do that, I have to sacrifice if I want to be better.
Better than me, hmm?
I will save lives that could have otherwise not been saved. Now, I could be like you and go around laughing and have a good time, haha, but I prefer to learn because the more I learn, the more likely I'll have the right answer at the crucial moment and save a life. You say I'm a prick? You say I'm a prick? You know, maybe I am. But you ask the average person when death comes knocking at their door whether they want a prick on their side or some kindergarten teacher who's gonna kiss their ass. Because when that day comes, I want the prick. And so will you.
Mitch goes back to his book. Patch walks to the door, then pauses and looks back.
You know, I forget how young you are, Mitch. That you think that you have to be a prick to get things done, and that you actually think that that's a new idea.
Mitch sits holding his chin, staring at his book. He drops his hand and sighs. It's evening. Patch and Truman are sitting in the diner.
You know what I'll do? I'll take it to the state medical board. And there's got to be some sort of constitutional right for visiting the sick.
Truman watches Patch sip his coffee.
Why don't you say anything?
Sorry, Patch. I think Walcott has a point. It's a hospital. And people are suffering and dying.
We're all dying, Truman. Our job is to increase health. You know what that means? That means improving the quality of life, not just delaying death.
Either way, for your own sake, I think you should just lay low for a while.
Maybe you're right.
Daytime. Julie and Joletta stare open-mouthed as the door to room 305 is approached. The door opens. Mr. Davis is asleep, but opens his eyes to see the apparition standing before him. It's an angel, dressed in flowing white robes, with huge outstretched wings and a halo. The angel is holding a book, from which he reads.
Preview of coming attractions.
There's...
Death. To die. To expire. To pass on. To perish. To peg out. To push up daisies. To push up posies. To become extinct. Curtains. Deceased. Demised. Departed and defunct. Dead as a doornail. Dead as a herring. Dead as a mutton. Dead as nits. The last breath. Paying a debt to nature. The big sleep. God's way of saying, slow down.
Mr. Davis points at Patch as if wanting to say something. Patch smiles and steps forward.
To check out.
Shuffle off this mortal coil.
To head for the happy hunting ground.
To blink for an exceptionally long period of time.
To find oneself without breath.
To be the incredible decaying man.
Worm buffet.
Kick the bucket.
Buy the farm.
Take the cab.
Cash in your chips.
And if we bury your ass up, we have a place to park my bike.
Going down the corridor.
Ooh, come on, it's shooting number 9 around that morphine pony. Come on now, boy. Yeah. Let's check out the maternity ward. You know those chicks put out.
in a lecture.
Here we see that the vitreous body is composed of a transparent jelly with a mesh of collagen fibers. Lights, please. Before we adjourn, Dean Walcott has a brief announcement.
Oh, he's going to have the sex change. I knew this.
Next Monday, the hospital is hosting a medical seminar / retreat in the Fellowship of American College of Gynecologists.
I'll get the strippers.
It is important that they be received in a manner suitable to their status and position. I have traditionally selected an outstanding student to head the welcoming committee. Time demands are great, and I wouldn't want to jeopardize the academic performance of a weaker student. This year, I have chosen Hunter Adams. Hunter, there's a detailed list of instructions in my office. Oh, and the auditorium could use a good cleaning.
Mitch smiles smugly as the students leave. Outside.
Did you hear him?
In a style according to their stature and position. I am a great doctor. Worship me. Spread before me. Who dares stand?
You know what I'm thinking? Maybe we should decorate with a Western motif. How about that? Ah, something with stirrups and a big banner that says,
Howdy, Garneroos! Dilated to meet you.
How about that?
How about just doing it straight?
What do you mean?
As in straight to graduation.
Well, if anybody has a problem with this, please, just walk away right now.
Truman, Corinne, and Adelaine turn and walk away.
All right.
Wow. Yes.
Okay. Patch walks off smiling to himself. A coach arrives. Dean Walcott and Dr. Eaton meet the arrivals as they disembark.
They're right on time.
Morning, Doctor. Welcome to campus.
Morning.
Good to see you. How you doing, Doctor?
Gentlemen, I believe that you'll find the facilities here just perfect for your purposes today. We have everything set up in the auditorium. If you just follow me in,
A pair of giant legs with feet in stirrups have been placed wide apart in front of the door, in the examination position.
Welcome, cold-handed ones. It's an honor to greet / welcome so many who have touched so many women in such a powerful way. Come on in. Watch out. It's a little slippery. And if you think it's hot out there, whoa! Come on! Come on! Come on!
Get him in my office now.
Dr. Eaton breaks into a smile.
All right, gentlemen, if you just follow me.
A banner above the door reads, Welcome Gynos, at your cervix. Looking embarrassed, the dean leads the group between the giant legs and holds the door open as they go in. Later, Patch enters the dean's office.
You want to see me, sir?
You are dismissed. Sir. From this school. Kindly remove your things and vacate the school premises as soon as possible.
What for? For asking a group of doctors to have a sense of humor about themselves?
Oh, I have a sense of humor, Hunter. I find it hilarious that as smart as you are, you could give me an airtight reason to throw you the hell out of here.
Why am I such a threat to you, sir?
Because what you want is for us to get down there on the same level as our patients, to destroy objectivity, all to uphold some idealistic buddy system that will allow you to work through your own feelings of inadequacy.
Patch defocuses his eyes and sees double.
What you have done here today is inexcusable. You have made a complete mockery out of our distinguished guests, and if you think for one minute that I will further tolerate your blatant disregard of the bylaws of this... What are you smiling at? Is this all a big joke to you?
Patch laughs.
Get out of here!
As Patch walks to the door, Dean Walcott turns to the window. A plaque on a door reads, Dr. J.P. Anderson, Dean of Medicine. Patch sits in the office.
Blatant disregard for school code and procedure. Defiant direct orders from a dean. And I'm aware of your creative efforts to make sure our visiting gynecologists feel right at home. Now, what is it you'd like me to do for you?
I want to graduate, sir. Dean Walcott thinks otherwise, but my grades are way above par. I want to finish school so I can become a doctor.
Well, I'm going to give this to you real straight. I have a hospital and a medical school to run here. I have to trust the people in my employ, otherwise their quality of life will turn to shit. Their life turned to shit, my life turned to shit. Do you follow?
Yes.
Good. Now, Dean Walcott is a pain in the ass, but I depend on him to keep me up to speed on what's going on around here, and I would never take the word of any student over his. However, I also have a source that informs me that your antics have improved the quality of life of the patients. They don't complain as much, they take less medication, and what's his name over in 305 has not thrown his bedpan at a nurse in over a week.
Spill.
Yeah, whatever. So, from now on, you will not enter that hospital unless under the supervision of the attendant as part of the curriculum, and you will steer clear of Dean Walcott.
So I'm still in school?
I wouldn't send the laundry out, but you just don't screw up, huh?
It's evening. Corinne walks to the door of Patch's room, number 205. She's holding a piece of paper. She glances at the note, then knocks. The room is filled to the ceiling with balloons.
What are you doing? I thought we were studying.
Studying cellular biology.
She looks around.
Where are you?
Somewhere. Surprise! Happy birthday!
Happy birthday! I don't believe this. Where is he?
I just saw him around.
Where is he, Truman? You gotta find him. Patch?
Patch has a book of sonnets.
I do not love you as if you were salt rose or topaz, or the arrow of carnations the fire shoots off. I love you as certain dark things are to be loved, in secret, between the shadow and the soul.
They look at each other through the sea of balloons.
Finish it later.
What the hell is this? Hunter? Hunter, please answer me! Stop laughing! Truman, I see you! State your name, who the hell are you? Who are you?
The surprise party guests leave Mitch floundering. As they sneak out, a mountain of balloons spills into the corridor. Later, Patch walks with Corinne.
You know, you could have saved yourself a lot of trouble and just asked me out.
Who said anything about asking you out?
I'd heard something about you.
That I was in a mental hospital?
Is it true?
I tried to kill myself. The mental war was the best thing that ever happened to me.
What did the doctors do to help you?
The doctors didn't help me. The patients helped me. They helped me realize that by helping them, I could forget about my own problems. And I did. I really helped some of them. It's an incredible feeling, Chris. There was one patient named Rudy. I helped him be able to pee. But for the first time in my life, I forgot about my own problems. It was an incredible high.
They stop by her door.
What?
She fights back tears.
It's just that, somebody, you know, could do for me what you did for me tonight after the way I've treated you. No one's ever done anything like that for me before.
She leans forward and kisses him on the lips.
Thank you.
She strokes his cheek.
Good night.
No, this is not a good night. This is a great night! You know?
She goes up the steps, smiles, gives a little wave, and goes in. Patch silently mouths, wow, claps his hands, and walks off as if dancing on air. In the hospital, a steel cabinet on casters is pushed down the corridor. Joletta is at her desk. Patch's head pops up.
Hi, I'm John the Baptist. Any calls?
I've been trying to reach you.
In Mr. Davis's room.
I love you, baby. Let's go inside.
A woman and two young boys pass Patch on their way out of the room. Patch walks forward and sits by the bed. Bill Davis's arm is resting on his chest. Patch takes his hand.
Hey, Bill. Turquoise has a nice color on you.
don't have to say anything. I know I look good.
Bill's eyes flick open.
My boys. My boys are beautiful. Did you see my boys?
Yeah. She's not bad either. You think after you're gone, maybe I could?
Oh, you're killing me here, Patch.
Bill convulses for a moment.
Sing me that stupid song.
Blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies. Do I see bluebirds singing a song? Nothing but bluebirds all day long.
Bill's head flops and he becomes still.
Blue days, all of them gone.
Patch smiles sadly. He strokes Bill's hand. Patch is still wearing a cheerful shirt from the party, but his expression is sad as he walks slowly towards the front desk. A lady with long dark hair is talking to the receptionist.
Forms, you can see her in a moment.
Excuse me. What's going on here?
Oh, drunk driver. She lost her husband and son. Her daughter's in trauma one, but it doesn't look good. I need the forms filled out.
Get over it. I mean,
you can see her in a moment.
In the diner.
Maybe you could explain it to me so I might understand it.
It's hospital procedure.
Whatever it is. Isn't right that a woman has to spend the last moments of her dying child filling out forms.
Hey, last year I had to have my appendix out. I forgot my insurance card, so they sent me home. My appendix could have burst. They didn't care.
You know, my antibiotic cost $100 a month.
I paid $250 just to find out I had a sprained ankle. I mean, do they really need to do all those tests?
You know what they need to do? The government needs to pay for health insurance.
It's complicated. Health insurance companies are why prices got so high in the first place.
So what do we do?
Yeah, what the hell is the answer?
Don't hurt your ankle.
You're right.
Patch lays a paper napkin box on its side and moves an ashtray.
Patch?
Mm-hmm. Wait.
Truman, the waitress and other customers watch as Patch puts a pair of joke spectacles with a fool's nose on the front of the box. He puts a red plastic cone on the top.
That's it. I've got to tell Corinne.
What?
Oh.
He stands.
Can I buy this stuff in?
Sure.
Obviously.
Later, the napkin box is on an outdoor table with glasses, false nose, and a red cone hat, with a kazoo on either side garnished with parsley. Corinne's in her pajamas.
What do you see?
Patch, it's late.
What do you see?
Parsley. And a horn.
No. Look beyond the objects, hmm? Look through them. Over here, look. Gonna let them blur. Tell me the first thing you see.
Something with a nose.
Okay, now imagine that's a building with a nose. A free hospital.
A free hospital. Can I go back to bed now?
No, because I'm bursting with ideas and I need you to help me. It'll be the first fun hospital in the world. It'll be a totally free-form building. It'll have, like, slides and secret passageways and game rooms.
Slow down, I can't write that fast.
I can't slow down. We'll use humor to heal pain and suffering. Doctors and patients will work side by side as peers. There'll be no titles, no bosses. People will come from all over the world to fulfill their dream of helping other people. There'll be a community where joy is a way of life, where learning is the highest aim, where love is the ultimate goal, huh? You have all that?
Yeah, not verbatim, but the overall insanity's intact.
That's why you have to help me with this.
Patch, no.
Oh, yes. No. Yes.
No.
I know it's not going to be an easy road, but you said anything worth doing is difficult.
Look, I'm not like you, Patch.
I want the white coat. I want people to call me doctor more than anything. I want the recognition.
And you get it every day in the eyes of patients you're helping. I mean, there is more to life than what Dean Wolcott puts out there. That is all about power and control. All right? I mean, I know you're scared.
You're right, I am scared. I'm scared to death. You know, you sit here and you talk about life without limits, you know, and breaking the rules. It all sounds very, very romantic. You want to know what the truth is about all that crap, Patch? Hmm? People get hurt.
And who did it to you?
I have to go.
Please, no, no, listen to me. Come on. Whatever it is, come on. You can tell me I can help you. I swear I can. Please, let me help you.
Corinne gets up and walks away.
I'm really starting to love the back of your head.
She half turns and looks back, but carries on walking, leaving Patch sitting on the bench. A caption reads, Medical School, third year. Patch and Dr. Eaton look at a young man with cuts on both arms.
Get this cleaned out and get him down to the suture room. You're going to be fine, Larry.
Larry's wheeled away.
Larry's been in and out of the ER for a couple of years.
Not because he's accident prone.
No, his father died 2 years ago. Since then, he's been subject to fits of depression and self-mutilation. Head trauma, D5.
Dr. Eaton takes some notes from a rack of clipboards.
Thank you for doing this.
You can thank me by not getting me fired. Just observe rounds and stay within hospital protocol. Look, Patch, you're a good thing for this hospital. You remind me of myself when I first started out on the fire, wanting to save the world. But you lose a little of that after a while. The system is what it is. It's not perfect, but it's all we have.
Why does it have to be all we have? Why can't it be changed?
You figure out how, Patch, and I'll be there for you. Bed 6 needs blood work. Mrs. O'Bannon needs blood work.
They go to their patients.
Hello, Ed. You're feeling a little dizzy.
Hello, Mrs. O'Bannon. May I call you Catherine? We draw a little blood.
Can you tell how many fingers I'm holding up? How many do you see? How many fingers?
Patch sees Dr. Eaton hold up 4 fingers.
How many fingers do you see, Ed?
He smiles. What I feel. Patch drives Corinne down a mountain road.
How much longer do I have to keep my eyes closed?
Just till I open mine. Keep them closed. You're almost there.
The clapped-out car stops on a track by some trees. Patch helps Corinne out and leads her to a rocky ledge that overlooks a valley and distant mountains.
I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid. It's going to be worth it. All right, you ready? Almost there. There you go. And open your eyes.
It's beautiful.
It's 105 acres of all natural forest. 7 streams, 2 waterfalls. This is it, the future site of the Gesundheit Institute.
This is yours.
Well, not yet, but it will be soon. There's something else.
Patch takes her by the hand. A VW camper van is parked by a tumble-down shack with a rickety veranda. They stand and look.
What is it?
Our new home.
Corinne! What do you think?
How did you find this?
Him? Arthur Mendelson. All this is his. The land, the cottage. He's letting us borrow it till we can purchase it.
Mr. Mendelson, I realize that under the terms of your commitment, you retain control of your assets. Nevertheless,
you learn anything about proctology yet, Patch?
A little bit.
Good. Take care of this asshole for me, will you?
Nice meeting you.
Mr. Mendelson,
Arthur walks off.
There's room for you.
A one-armed man approaches.
Hi, Bile.
Hey, Patch.
Who's Bile?
An old friend.
Oh.
Without medical insurance.
Hey, Bile?
He's just staying a couple of days.
How you doing?
What do you say?
As Bile goes in, the door screen falls off. Corinne smiles.
Think potential.
Patch and Truman repair the screen, then fix the veranda railing.
Hey!
A woman arrives with some shopping. She loads food into a cupboard while Corinne scrubs a sink. Patch paints eyebrows and a moustache on a window. Corinne looks at him through the painted glass as he does a Groucho impersonation.
It was only a lovely couple. We can't go on meeting like this.
At the hospital...
You called us up. Ma'am, the card has expired. How do you have a valid card?
Tiny medicine.
The woman with the expired card has her daughter examined by Patch and Corinne at the Gesundheit shack. In a lecture, Dean Walcott looks suspicious as Patch yawns. Patch and Truman pull up in a van and exchange a look as they see a queue of people outside the county free clinic. But it's hard to believe it. There's a barbecue outside the Gesundheit. People are painting the building. Patch paints Corinne's back. She turns and rollers his face. They fall into a tray of paint. Arthur laughs. Everyone poses for a photo on the veranda. Later, the picture is on the wall. The clinic is bursting with people. Bile sits at a desk answering the phones.
Hang on a second. I only have one arm. Gesundheit.
As some children run out of the door, a tall young man enters. It's Larry, who Patch met in the ER after he'd cut his arms. He looks around nervously.
Hi. How can we help you?
I don't know. I heard about this place, and I thought maybe I'd get some, maybe I'd talk to somebody because my thoughts...
This is crazy. Word's getting out. We're handling the overflow from three different clinics now. Start my pediatric clerkship next week. I don't know how I'm going to keep up.
Patch blows bubbles.
Anybody call for a doctor in here? Just try this right now. There, look at that there. Hey, thank you, Judy and Sissy, for that lovely medicine.
A man's watching a Marx Brothers film on TV.
How are you feeling, Frank? You feel better?
Yeah.
Really? Well, keep on your medication.
You can never go wrong if you're a Marxist.
Hey, Patch.
Yes?
This is, I didn't get your name.
Larry.
Larry.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good.
Nice to meet you.
What are you passionate about, Larry? What excites you? What turns you on?
I like to read.
I love to read. What do you like to read? Who's your favorite author?
Kazantzakis.
Kazantzakis. Oh. World is trouble. Man needs a little madness or else...
Or else he dare not cut the rope and be free.
That's great, Larry. That's wonderful. We're going to get along just fine. Truman!
Yeah, Patch, what?
Can you come over here and show Larry around? Nice having you here, Larry. Welcome.
Thanks. Okay.
Larry walks off with Truman.
I've seen Larry in the ER before.
He's weird.
I'm weird. If we don't show him compassion, who will?
Patch leans over and blows a raspberry on Corinne's neck. Patch wanders off. Corinne's smile slightly fades as she looks in Larry's direction. It's evening. A dark blue sky hangs over the wooden building where warm light spills from the windows. Corinne steps outside and lights two tall torches that are stuck in the ground, one on each side of the entrance. As she blows out her lighter, Patch comes out to join her. They both sit on the veranda step. Corinne rests her face on her hands.
Everyone asleep?
Yeah, including me.
Corinne smiles at Patch, then gazes out into the darkness.
You okay?
Yeah. God, Patch, it's amazing.
What?
Just what you've done with this place, you know?
You too?
She takes his hand.
These people that were helping, they would have had nowhere to go. You're a good man.
Smiling, Patch leans over to kiss her, but she turns her head away. He frowns and studies her. Corinne looks at the ground.
What are we? Is it me?
She shakes her head, her eyes filled with tears.
I mean, are we good friends that occasionally kiss?
much. My entire life, men have been attracted to me.
Tears roll down her cheeks. She turns and looks at Patch.
My entire life.
Patch holds her gaze, his brow furrowed with concern.
When I was a little girl, I would look out my bedroom window at the caterpillars. I envied them so much. No matter what they were before, no matter what happened to them, they could just hide away, you know, and turn into these beautiful creatures that could fly away completely untouched. I hated men so much. I wanted nothing to do with them.
Patch slides closer and strokes her head.
And everybody that's around you.
As Patch smiles, tears well in his eyes. Corinne leans over and kisses him on the lips.
I love you. I've loved you for so long.
They sit on the step, hugging each other tightly, framed by the two burning torches. In the distance, blue mountains are silhouetted against a faint glow in the sky. It's morning. A large ornamental butterfly of red, yellow, and orange hangs in a window. Under the window is a bed with an ornate metal bedstead. Corinne wakes up and opens her eyes. She turns and sees Patch sitting on the end of the bed looking down at her.
Scared me.
I was watching you sleep.
A real knack. Impressive.
Patch reads from a piece of paper.
I love you without knowing how, or when, or from where. I love you straight.
Truman bursts in.
Sorry. We have a situation out here that needs attention.
Truman shows Patch and Corinne the supplies cupboard. It's almost empty.
I've been trying to warn you guys about this for weeks, and now we have absolutely zero supplies. There's an older gentleman over there named Charlie. He has a sprained shoulder. I don't have any slings or swaths to treat him. I had to wrap his arm in his own belt. We have no iodine. We don't even have any gauze, for God's sakes.
There's an entire supply room at the hospital.
That couldn't possibly be because those supplies belong to the hospital.
No, it's too obvious. Come on, I need your feet. I want your body. Come on.
Bye. Behave.
Hurry, please. Stop crushing me.
Quiet, you're a corpse.
Ow!
Shh! Damn it. Watch it. Quiet, you're an empty.
Shut up!
It's evening. Nurses Joletta and Judy watch as Patch, wearing a surgical hat and mask, wheels a covered trolley past the desk. Truman's bare feet are sticking out of the end. As they go, some rolls of bandages drop onto the floor. Dean Walcott approaches and picks up a bandage. He looks around, then walks off. Corinne enters the clinic with a bag of shopping. Corinne turns on the light, shuts the door and puts down the shopping bag. She hangs up her coat and notices a light flashing on the answer phone. She presses a button. Corinne turns off the machine and looks around with a worried expression. Corinne approaches a large stone Gothic mansion. A flight of steps lead down between two tall hedgerows towards an arched entrance. She checks the address on a piece of paper, then walks down the steps towards the front door.
Hello?
The door isn't locked and swings open. Corinne goes in. She shuts the door behind her and walks in. She finds herself in a large oak-paneled hall with a polished wooden floor. Through a tall stone arch, she sees Larry sitting with his back to her, playing a black grand piano. There's a wide-open fireplace and a roaring fire. She walks towards him.
Larry? Are you okay?
Larry gets up from the piano stool and hurries over.
Yeah, I'm fine.
I didn't know you could play. You sound wonderful.
Thank you.
And this house, it's amazing. Is it yours?
It's my father's. He left it to me. Here, let me take your jacket.
Sure.
She takes off her coat and gives it to him.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Come in.
Larry points into the room, revealing multiple scars on his arm.
I really can't stay very long. I just wanted to see how you were doing.
Yeah, you're right.
He hangs her coat in a cupboard and looks at her strangely.
And we don't want to be late.
He shuts the cupboard door. It's morning. Patch is slumped on a bench on the veranda fast asleep. Truman approaches and wakes him.
Patch, you just got a telephone call. Dean Anderson wants to see you in his office immediately.
No, I found out about our borrowed supplies.
We're dead.
Ye have little faith.
Patch pats Truman on the back as he leaves. Later, he enters Dean Anderson's office.
Dean Anderson, I know what this is all about, and I assure you, sir, I'll pay.
Patch sits in a leather armchair and faces Dean Anderson. The dean fidgets with his notepad.
Something happened last night. Corinne Fisher was murdered. She was with Larwood Silver. There's a shotgun involved, and he turned the gun on himself. Jesus Christ, Patch, I'm sorry. I know she was a friend. If there's anything I can do.
Patch stares blankly ahead, holding his lip.
Hell of a deal.
There's a crowd of mourners at the funeral. A large bouquet of white flowers sits on top of the coffin.
Into your hands, O merciful Savior, we commend your servant Corinne. Receive her into the arms of your mercy, into the blessed rest of everlasting peace, and into the glorious company of the saints on high. Amen.
A grey-haired woman is comforted by two young men. Truman, standing by the coffin, looks around as the crowd disperses. Mitch walks over to his car. Looking across the path, he sees Patch peering out from behind a tree. Mitch looks at him for a moment, then climbs into his car. Once everyone has gone, Patch steps forward from behind the tree and slowly crosses the path. He approaches the coffin, which is sitting on a plinth adorned with white lilies. Patch stares at the coffin. Reaching into his jacket, he pulls out a folded piece of paper and opens it.
I told you I'd finish it some other time. I love you without knowing how, or when, or from where. I love you straightforwardly, without complexities or pride. So I love you because I know no other way than this. So close, that your hand on my chest is my hand. So close that when you close your eyes, you fall asleep.
Patch steps forward and rests his cheek on top of the coffin. He kisses the lid.
I'm sorry.
It's daytime at the Gesundheit. Truman finds Patch in his room packing.
Can't disband, you know that, right? What about our patients? What do we tell them?
They'll manage. I managed before.
I refuse to quit.
Good.
God, you're being so self-indulgent. This has been your vision, but we all built this place, and it belongs to all of us. Corinne will always remain within these walls. If you just walk away from that, if you let that all die. I've dedicated every spare moment I have to assisting you in what I believe is a pure and a good purpose. Quitting is not going to help you get through this. You've always told us, stop it.
I've always told you what? People are good. Trust people? Ha! You know, Truman, in all of God's creations, only human beings kill their own species. Here's a fun fact for your final exam.
Corinne's death cannot make helping people wrong.
She saw it coming. She knew there was something dangerous about Larry. I didn't see it.
Patch, why are you being like this?
Because I killed her, Truman. I taught her the medicine that killed her.
Truman fights back tears. Patch picks up his bag and looks around the room. There's a potted plant by the window.
She'd still be here if I hadn't met her.
Patch pushes past Truman and out of the door. At the hospital, Patch empties his locker. He throws red noses into a bin.
You can't leave. What you say is true. Looks like I'm defying the laws of possibility.
Mitch blocks the way and stops Patch from leaving.
What are you doing? Oh, I can't leave until you beat me, is that it? Okay, I surrender. You're number one. You're the top student in the class. You're smarter than me. Is that what you want to hear? Now can I leave?
Patch tries to get past, but Mitch blocks him again.
Yell Mrs. Kennedy in 212. She doesn't eat. I visited her room every day for the last 3 weeks. I can't get her to eat. I know everything there is to know about medicine. I've studied relentlessly. I guarantee you I cannot do out-diagnose any attending and surgeon in this hospital. But I can't make her eat.
Mitch looks away tearfully.
You have a gift. You have a way with people. You know, they like you. And if you leave, I can't learn this way.
Patch looks at Mitch thoughtfully for a moment, then walks past. Mitch shuts his eyes. Later, Patch stands on the rocky ledge overlooking the valley where he'd previously taken Karen.
So what now, huh? What do you want from me?
Patch steps forward to the edge of the ledge and looks down. It's a sheer drop into a deep ravine.
Yeah, I could do it. You both know you wouldn't stop me.
Patch looks up at the blue sky.
So answer me, please. Tell me what you're doing. Okay, let's look at the logic. You create man. Man suffers enormous amounts of pain. Man dies. Maybe you should have had just a few more brainstorming sessions prior to creation. You rested on the seventh day. Maybe you should have spent that day on compassion.
Patch moves his right foot. A small stone falls over the edge, bouncing off the rock face on its way down.
You know what? And not worth it.
Sadly, Patch turns away. He stops and looks down at his battered brown leather bag resting on the ground. Sitting on top of the bag is a large monarch butterfly of red and gold with thick black lines, its wings decorated like a stained glass window. The butterfly gently opens and closes its wings. Patch looks in astonishment as the butterfly flutters over to him. It lands on the front of his bright Hawaiian-style shirt. Patch holds out a finger and the butterfly climbs onto it. He holds up his hand and looks at the creature as it opens and closes its delicate wings. A smile slowly forms on Patch's lips and he laughs. The butterfly takes off and flies high into the air, circling above Patch's head. He stares up in wonderment. In the hospital, Patch marches purposefully down a corridor. He's still wearing the same Hawaiian-style shirt. He goes through a door. Inside the room, Mitch is standing by a man's bed writing some notes.
You still want help with Mrs. Kennedy?
Mitch turns and blinks. Mrs. Kennedy is in bed. She looks round as Mitch and Truman enter with a wheelchair. Truman pushes Mrs. Kennedy in the wheelchair up the corridor and round a corner. Mitch follows, glancing around and looking anxious. Outside in the grounds, Mrs. Kennedy's eyes widen in amazement as she sees Patch standing in a large round tub filled with noodles. She stares open-mouthed at the crowd of doctors and nurses. Mitch gently lifts her out of the wheelchair and Truman helps her into the tub of noodles. Patch takes her hand and they dance in the noodles, doing the twist. Joletta and the others clap as Mrs. Kennedy gives Patch a big hug. Truman and Mitch smile. Mrs. Kennedy takes a handful of noodles and plonks them on Patch's head. Mitch laughs as Patch and Mrs. Kennedy fall over in the noodles. They lie on their backs, kicking their feet. Later, Patch walks down the path, leaving wet, squelchy footprints. Nurse Judy hurries down the steps.
Patch? Hey. I'm supposed to give you this.
She hands Patch an envelope. He opens it. As he reads the letter, his jaw tightens. He screws up the letter and marches off. Dean Walcott's at his desk in his office. Patch bursts in.
You turn around and walk right out of here this very instant.
Why?
Everything will be delineated in your letter of dismissal.
Why?
You don't fit in. There are standards and codes. You make the patients and everyone else around you uncomfortable.
I make you uncomfortable.
Well, you can make this into a personal issue if you'd like. But the reality is, you are not cut out to be a physician. And it is my responsibility.
Responsibility? You have one responsibility, to be a dickhead. How hard can that be? All you have to do is make sure your head is a dick and it's attached to your neck.
You leave immediately.
I want to see my records.
They're confidential. Only the step!
As Dean Walcott picks up his phone, Patch storms out to reception and opens a filing cabinet.
Please, you have to have permission. You can't just go in there and take your own file.
Sitting with Truman.
Your marks are basically perfect. You've got to be near the top of the class. This excessive happiness actually says you're excessively happy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does that mean? Isn't that good?
I've got to fight this.
What can we do? Dean Walcott seems thoroughly committed to your not ever becoming a doctor. Even Dean Anderson signed this.
I'm screwed. Not like this. You need my help.
I prefer to think I'm using you.
Patch walks with Mitch.
You have one shot. You'd have to appeal to the state medical board.
How does that work?
Well, you claim that a prejudice and injustice has occurred. They'll be worried about a suit. They'll have to investigate.
Then what?
They'll review your grades, which is good. Mm-hmm. You're almost top of the class. But mostly your behavior. Do you have any idea what Walcott has on you?
Patch holds up the file.
How'd you get these?
Don't ask.
They can't prevent me from graduating because of a personality clash, can they?
Look, Hunter, this is a medical institution you're dealing with. You know, they draw their own law. You'll just have to get their focus on your high marks and off of this.
I'm screwed, aren't I?
You're almost a doctor. They're a panel of doctors. Just think of them as your peers. I'll return these.
Mitch hands him back the file and wags a finger.
Get a suit.
A large hall is packed with people sitting in rows. Others sit in an upper gallery. It's laid out as a courtroom, with Patch sitting alone at a table at the front. He's wearing a suit. Dean Walcott, at another table, casts a sneering look. A row of 10 crusty-looking doctors sit behind a long table. The chairman of the tribunal is a balding man with a white goatee beard and a bow tie.
Hunter Adams. You've been accused of practicing medicine without a license. It's a very grave charge, son. Are you aware that it's unlawful to practice medicine without a medical license?
Yes, sir, I am.
Are you aware that running a medical clinic without the proper licensing can place both you and the public in a great deal of danger?
Is a home a clinic, sir?
If you are admitting patients and treating them, physical location is irrelevant.
Yes, sir.
Patch stands.
Will you define treatment for me?
Yes, treatment would be defined as the care of a patient seeking medical attention. Have you been treating patients, Mr. Adams?
So I live with several people. They come and go as they please. I offer them whatever help I can.
Mr. Adams, have you or have you not been treating patients at your ranch?
Everyone who comes to the ranch is a patient, yes. And every person who comes to the ranch is also a doctor.
I'm sorry.
Every person who comes to the ranch is in need of some form of physical or mental help. They're patients. But also every person who comes to the ranch is in charge of taking care of someone else, whether it's cooking for them, cleaning them, or even a simple task as listening. That makes them doctors. I use that term broadly, gentlemen, but is not a doctor someone who helps someone else? When did the term doctor get treated with such reverence as, oh, right this way, Dr. Smith, or excuse me, Dr. Scholes, what wonderful foot pads, or pardon me, Dr. Patterson, but your flatulence has no odor. At what point in history did a doctor become more than a trusted and learned friend who visited and treated the ill? Now you ask me if I've been practicing medicine. Well, if this means opening your door to those in need, those in pain, caring for them, listening to them, applying a cold cloth until a fever breaks. If this is practicing medicine, if this is treating a patient, then I am guilty as charged, sir.
Did you consider the ramifications of your actions? What if one of your patients had died?
What's wrong with death, sir? What are we so mortally afraid of? Why can't we treat death with a certain amount of humanity and dignity and decency and, God forbid, maybe even humor? Death is not the enemy, gentlemen. If we're going to fight a disease, let's fight one of the most terrible diseases of all, indifference. Now, I've sat in your schools and heard people lecture on transference and professional distance. Transference is inevitable, sir. Every human being has an impact on another. Why don't we want that in a patient-doctor relationship? That's why I've listened to your teachings and I believe they're wrong. A doctor's mission should be not just to prevent death, but also to improve the quality of life. That's why you treat a disease, you win, you lose. You treat a person, I guarantee you'll win, no matter what the outcome.
Patch turns around.
Now here today, this room is full of medical students. Don't let them anesthetize you. Don't let them numb you out to the miracle of life. Always live in awe of the glorious mechanism of the human body. Let that be the focus of your studies and not a quest for grades, which will give you no idea what kind of doctor you will become.
Mr. Adams, please turn
and don't wait till you're on the ward to get your humanity back. Start your interviewing skills now. Start talking to strangers. Talk to your friends. Talk to wrong numbers. Talk to everyone.
Mr. Adams.
And cultivate friendships with those amazing people standing in the back of the room. Nurses, they can teach you. They've been with people every day. They wade through blood and shit. They have a wealth of knowledge to share with you. And so do the professors you respect, the ones who are not dead from the heart up. Share their compassion. Let that be contagious.
Mr. Adams, I demand that you turn and address the board.
Sir, I want to be a doctor with all my heart.
Gilletta watches with concern as Patch struggles to compose himself. The members of the tribunal look at him.
I wanted to become a doctor so I could serve others. And because of that, I've lost everything. But I've also gained everything. I've shared the lives of patients and staff members at the hospital. I've laughed with them. I've cried with them. This is what I want to do with my life. And as God is my witness, no matter what your decision today, sir, I will still become the best damn doctor the world has ever seen. Now, you have the ability to prevent me from graduating. You can keep me from getting the title and the white coat. But you can't control my spirit, gentlemen. You can't keep me from learning. You can't keep me from studying. So you have a choice. You can have me as a professional colleague, passionate, or you can have me as an outspoken outsider, still adamant. Either way, I'll probably still be viewed as a thorn. But I promise you one thing. I am a thorn that will not go away.
Is that all?
I hope not, sir.
We will adjourn briefly.
The door at the back of the hall opens. Everyone turns as Truman enters. He's followed in by a large group of children and adults, all people who have been helped by Patch. They stand and smile at him. Patch smiles back at them. The members of the group turn their heads away for a moment, then turn back to face the front. They're wearing red noses. They look at Patch with great fondness, and he laughs with tears in his eyes.
Thank you.
Patch laughs and pinches his nose. The meeting has been adjourned. People are standing around waiting for the hearing to reconvene. A side door opens and the doctors on the panel file in. They return to their seats behind the long desk on the platform at the front of the hall. Everyone sits. Patch looks nervous and hangs his head. Dean Walcott glances across at him, looking smug.
Hunter Adams.
Patch gets to his feet and stands at the side of his desk to face the panel.
We find your methods less than appealing. Your appearance and your demeanor do not reflect what we believe is necessary to earn a patient's trust and respect. You openly accuse us of adhering to time-honored practices that for years have been the backbone of the entire medical institution. However, we find no fault in your attempts to improve the quality of life around you. We find no fault in your desire to expand upon existing medical practices and theories. We applaud your love of the patient. Your grades are among the highest in your class, and therefore we find no merit in the decision to block your graduation from medical school.
Patch laughs with relief and looks round. Dr. Eaton gives him a big smile. Truman mouths, yes.
Now, along with your crass and disdainful behavior, you carry with you a flame, which one could only hope would spread through the medical profession like a brush fire. And, Dean Walcott, in the future, I think matters like this could best be solved if you yourself would practice a little excessive happiness.
The spectators get to their feet and give Patch a standing ovation. Dean Walcott purses his lips. Patch glances around, smiling happily. He removes his suit jacket to reveal a lurid patterned shirt. Gilletta beams at him, clapping. The graduation ceremony. Outside in the grounds, rows of people sit facing a stage. Dean Anderson is at the lectern, with the professors sitting behind him.
So today you go from being students in a class to being members of a class, a very select class. You face the future with your heads held high because you are now doctors.
Dean Walcott walks to a basket containing rolled scrolls. Professors and graduates are wearing black gowns and mortarboards.
Dr. Michael Ames.
The graduates form a line and pass behind Dean Anderson to collect their scrolls from Dean Walcott.
Dr. Doris Ackerman.
With a proud smile, Doris Ackerman shakes hands with Dean Walcott and collects her scroll.
Dr. Hunter Patch Adam.
Arthur and Rudy are in the crowd.
Yay, Patch!
Dean Walcott hands Patch his scroll and shakes hands.
Well, I'm happy to see you finally decided to conform.
More than you know, sir.
Patch turns his back on the crowd and bows to the professors. He's naked under his gown, which is open at the back, revealing his bare backside. Then he turns and bows low to the crowd, giving the professors and Dean Walcott a full moon. The crowd laughs. Dean Walcott looks shocked, but Dr. Eaton smiles. Patch walks away down the red carpet. A freeze frame. A caption reads, "During the next 12 years, Patch Adams opened a home-based family medical practice and treated more than 15,000 people without payment, malpractice insurance, or formal facilities. He purchased the 105 acres in West Virginia, and construction of the Gesundheit Hospital is currently underway. To date, a waiting list of over 1,000 physicians have offered to leave their current practices and join Patch's cause." The end.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. Hold me now, 'cause I've got pain on the heart. I'm going where my heart will take me. I've got faith to believe I can do anything. I've got strength of the soul, and no one's gonna bend or break me. I can reach any star. Try.